Good morning, good morning. Welcome, Teach Better family, to Teach Better Today. I'm Katie Miglin. This is Joshua Stamper. Josh, they let us do this again. Shh.
Don't tell anyone.
We are so excited to be with you guys again to discuss another awesome topic. We've got some fun stuff to discuss today, and we're just glad you're here with us. So go ahead and refill your coffee. You've got about 30 seconds before we'll be right back. Good morning. Happy, I don't know, day that ends in Y. Welcome to Teach Better Today, where we go live every single morning on all of your streaming platforms. I'm with Joshua Stamper, which means it's going to be an awesome day. Josh, how are you doing today?
I have coffee in hand. I'm doing great. And I get to hang out with you again, Katie.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about that. I'm not going to lie. I thought for sure they'd shut this down, but we tricked him into another one. So yeah, here's my complaint, Josh, is that I made my coffee too early this morning and misproportioned the amount that I would need during the show. And now I'm almost out and now I'm sad about it.
So you're just taking small sips to make it last longer. And it's probably cold, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Is that a thing that like, okay, maybe you don't face this, but like, do you ever make your coffee like really early in the morning and then by the time you're like, ooh, now is when I actually need it to survive, then it's like gone and you have to go make more?
That is constant. And then I also wonder, maybe people could put this in the chat, do you have to always drink hot coffee? Because I don't really care. Like, I just want coffee. So like, as it progressively gets colder, I will continue to drink it until it's gone. But I know some folks are like, yeah, and some folks are kind of gave the face that Katie just gave, which is, you are disgusting. Why on earth would you do that?
Okay. I don't think it's disgusting. I've decided, because I truly do like iced coffee. I like cold coffee. I like all the things. I think it's a head thing. I think it's a mental thing, because if I have coffee in a mug and it's cold, my mind tells me it should be hot. But if I literally, and I've done this before, I will take this and pour it into a glass with ice. And I'm like, fine to drink it. Is that not really neurotic?
We are talking about you, though. I mean, that's not surprising. I will tell you that I've actually just put ice water after drinking my coffee in the mug just because I think it tastes better. But that's just me.
Ice, I really struggle to drink cold things in a cup of coffee or in a coffee cup because I like to do this. And you don't want to do that if it's cold.
Well, I thought it was interesting. You started twitching when I started talking about it. So I figured, no, you would never do that.
You guys, we all have faults. And mine apparently is around what kind of cup my coffee needs to be in. But I would love to know, am I the only one that really like wants a hot cup of coffee if it's in a mug? I need to know, is there other people like me? Is there like a support group I can be a part of?
I think more people will be in the chat supporting you, Katie, than supporting me.
But
I think I'm out of the norm.
I think is like a norm. I mean, there's so many like memes out there about the number of times someone reheats their coffee. Shout out to Sarah Jesse, who is on our team. I worked with her for a billion years, and she would, I kid you not, still be drinking the same cup of coffee at 3 p.m. that she had been.
Oh, not three.
Right. But these were like the Starbucks, you know, like the giant sure. Starbucks. I would go in at the end of the day, students had left, and she would be putting it back in the microwave for the 17th time. And I'm like, please just brew a new cup. Just call your losses with that one.
So Leslie, I bought her one of those mugs that it'll automatically keep it warm. So yeah. It does the temperature. And now I'm just jealous that I don't have one, because it makes so much sense to have something like that where it right. just naturally keeps it warm. So you don't have to put it in the microwave. You don't have to worry about it.
How long does it last? Is it one of the battery operated ones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you just charge it every day.
You're such a good husband.
I try.
I mean, I think that's like the only criteria is like having
I just try and keep her warm. Yeah. So electric blankets, electric vests, the heated mugs, you know, just keep her warm. That's my main goal.
Yeah. It sounds like that's her love language. So you yes. get out of the fire. Good job, buddy. Well, yes, we'd love to know if, are you someone that's like drinks like team cold coffee, team like iced coffee, like give us all the information on what, and maybe you're like, stop talking about coffee. This is like all you guys talk about on the show. That's fine. We'd love to hear from you too. We love our non-coffee drinkers. We do think you're slightly strange that you can survive without it, but that's okay. We still love you and we still welcome you. Josh, I can't believe it's like middle of February.
I know. Where's the year gone?
No kidding. I feel like we literally just got it done in January and now it's like February's almost over, kind of. We have a bonus day, which I'm very excited about, but it's just insane that we're already this late into February.
It felt like fireworks just went off. We were celebrating the new year and all of a sudden it's almost March.
Yes. Yes. It's crazy. We've got some fun things coming up on the team. We've got 12 hour, all that good stuff. If you are not following us, whether us individually or our team, make sure you check all that out because there's lots of good stuff coming here in the next few weeks. This spring, I feel like spring things start to kind of amp up again and we get kind of rocking and rolling. We'll go to schools more because, you know, that's after like the holiday, after the breaks, all that good stuff. We start to be a little bit busier, which is always really fun. And so, yes, make sure you're following us so that we can kind of stay connected. But Josh, we've got another really great topic today. I say that every time we're together for the record. But I am excited about this. Are you ready to jump into it?
Let's do it.
Welcome back. If you're just now tuning in, good morning, happy, whatever day it is. Welcome to Teach Better Today. I am Katie Miglin, and I'm here with Joshua Stamper, where we go live every single morning on all of your favorite streaming platforms. And so far, we've really just covered coffee, which I know that shocks many of you, because I feel like we talk about that probably once a week. Maybe less. But today we are going to get into a good topic that, as Josh put it, he'll say what needs to be said. He'll talk about it. It is a topic I think surface level can be maybe a little sensitive simply because of our profession and what we care about. So this was a listener question that was presented to us. And the question is, how do we help students care about their education when their parents don't seem to feel it's important? And so I think you can understand why that might feel a little dicey, I guess, because it can come across negative depending on the situation, depending on your experience. But Josh, when I kind of posed this question, you were like, yeah, let's totally talk about this. So what are your like first initial thoughts coming out of the gate?
Well, I just was like, let's talk about it because I've experienced this so much and not just like that they didn't enjoy or feel like there was value in education, but there was a break between their, if it was a value of the education system or that they had a poor experience themselves. I had a lot of parents that, and this is something we talk about all the time, is like, there's a root cause for something, right? So like, if they don't value the education system, why is that? And trying to have those crucial conversations with those parents of like getting to why it is that they feel what they did. And a lot of times there was a lot of like animosity, or anxiousness or like a lot of like negative feelings of when they were in the front office and trying to be honest, to be like, hey, what's going on? Like, you know, I'm feeling this and is this truthful or like, can you share a little bit more about your educational background or how you've, you know, experienced the school in general? So for instance, like if someone was coming from another state, they might've had, and I can think of a family specifically that, you know, when asking that question, it was like, hey, my kid had a terrible experience in this state and this is X, Y, and Z that occurred with the administrative staff. So yeah, I have mistrust when it comes to school leadership. Mm-hmm. And they were very honest and candid with that, but that wouldn't have occurred unless I had that conversation with them about their previous experiences. And so then digging even deeper, they had a terrible experience as a child. So then, you know, what they experienced, now their kids is experiencing. And so they're just, they have all this emotion behind how they're treating the school and, you know, trying to break that down. That was kind of my charge, was like, okay, now I know this. I want them, not only the student, but the parent, to have an incredible time and experience that they'd never felt before. And mm-hmm. thankfully, I got to a point where, you know, if I called this parent about their child, she had my back 100%, because she had multiple years of seeing, you know, the love and the support that we were providing to her child. But then also calling her and being extremely honest and having, you know, an open line of communication with her. If she called me, I was calling her right back immediately and trying to change what's going on. So for as the, to hit the question, Katie, you had asked about, like, if the parents didn't value education. So if that's the case, that doesn't mean the child is not going to value education. So explaining why it is such an important thing for them to do well in school, or to have the knowledge and the mastery of the subject matter. And so a lot of times, especially in middle school, goodness sakes, that was a conversation every day, you know, with teachers to students or admin to students, because a lot of times the kid didn't care, you know, and if there wasn't a support system behind that to help them in that, then yes, you know, we need to spend our time as educators to get to the bottom of, okay, why is it you're feeling this way? And then trying to teach them why education is valuable.
Yeah, I mean, exactly what you said. There's a whole list of reasons why. Why is that the attitude, the feeling? When I read this question, I kind of thought of it in a different way. My first reaction was, how do you know they don't value education? Yeah. Because that's a whole, you know, I think you bring up so many good points of that. A parent who, you know, maybe they've expressed it, or their behaviors have told you that school is a negative place for them, you know, and causes anxiety, whatever. To me, sometimes I think we assume by maybe a lack of participation means they don't value. And that's really tricky. I know I fell into that trap. I knew, you know, if I would email a parent and I didn't get a response, my immediate go-to was, oh, they just don't care. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard because it was always in reflection where I was like, well, I don't actually know that they don't care. Maybe they never got my email. Maybe, you know, but when you're in that moment and you're frustrated because you want the support, sometimes them not being there is, it's easy to lean on that. They don't care. They don't value.
Right.
There are a whole slew of reasons why you might have a parent that comes across that way. I know one of the most eye-opening things I learned in my career was, certain cultures see it as a sign of disrespect to become involved in their student's school. So that was huge for me when I learned there was this whole population that I was teaching that the reason I never could get a hold of a parent wasn't because they didn't care. It was actually quite the opposite, is that mm-hmm. they cared so much that they didn't want to come across disrespectful by getting involved. You know, and sometimes we forget that parents are people too. And I know you and I have talked many times about just the chaos of parenting. Yep. But sometimes that is a lot, especially single parents or parents who work various shifts that might conflict with a student's school day or with your schedule. And so it's really important, I think, to remind ourselves that they're human, and there might be a lot of things that you don't see of why that parent comes across the way they do to you. And so just because they didn't come to parent-teacher conferences, or just because they don't email you back, or they didn't, you know, send in money for the permission slip, none of that necessarily means that they don't value what you're doing or what their student is doing. It just might be that their plate is full. And so sometimes I think we have to kind of pause and remind ourselves of that. But then, like you said, establishing those relationships so that we can break any barriers that do exist. So getting to know them, getting to know their why, getting to know what kind of was the root of the problem, whether it was in the current generation, the generation before, all of those things are super, super helpful. And just kind of working together, because how will you ever get to a point where you feel like you have a good relationship unless you at some point break the barrier? And I know we've said this before, but if you're calling, emailing, however your communication is, only when there's a problem, well, then you're kind of continuing the trend of whatever negative they had. So, you know, early on, if you can make a lot of positive phone calls, mm-hmm. drop a positive email. I love to do postcards. I know Ray and I've talked about that before, but I used to try to do like a postcard to all my students by first semester. I tried, not always easy, but I would try to just send something positive in the mail or send a positive email, but just something to kind of make some deposits early on so that you can kind of get to know families and get to know yep. parents, things like that. So Josh, when we're kind of talking through like, okay, so let's say we've learned that a parent family is not involved, doesn't value education. They've made it clear that they do not want to be involved. So let's go to the other extreme of like, we've hit all the things we can. We're struggling mentally with helping a student whose family does not value education. Okay. Let's like actually answer the question. What are your thoughts, I guess, on a student who is in your classroom, who you know their outside life does not support the work you're doing in your classroom? What would you advise a teacher to do?
Well, I do think breaking the barrier, as you said, is super important, because I don't think that the structure without parents is the best. So like trying to find a way to communicate. And I'll give you an example. For us, parent involvement was very small. It was a small percentage. And so we were trying to figure out like, how can we bring that into like the trifecta, right? You want to have obviously the school, the student, and the parents all participating together, where we would actually go out to the neighborhoods. We'd go out to the apartment complexes and we would have our, you know, meet and greets out there to bring food and bring entertainment and stuff, like, so that it was more of like a, hey, you're important to the school building. And as you know, a lot of people don't check their email. If you look at their app on their phone, they have thousands sitting in their inbox. So like, obviously that wasn't very good communication mm-hmm. For us to get and disseminate information and for them to communicate back. A lot of them were working multiple jobs, like you were saying. So like they have very little time, but for whatever reason, we'd have these events and it was a lot of people would come out to them and it was, mm-hmm. we would meet them for the first time. Try and figure out who their child was. They were always super nice. They were appreciative. They loved the fact that we came out. And then that established a face-to-face conversation and starting to build that trust and that relationship with them. And it meant a lot for them to understand, hey, my child's administrative staff, their teachers feel like it's important to meet us. And that went a long way. And that started mm-hmm. to bridge a relationship that was never established before. So when we did need to call or when we did email, they were more likely to respond. And what we yeah. found out was, like you said, a lot of times it wasn't that they didn't value education, because mm-hmm. if you really truly surveyed folks and asked them, I think it would be a very, very small percentage that said that they don't believe that the school system has value for their child. I can't even tell you an experience that I had where that was actually the root of the problem. It was always something else that was going on in their life. And so for us as teachers, as counselors, as administrators, it was always trying to find ways to make that connection. Because if you're doing something over and over and it's not working, stop doing it. You know,
right.
We started posting on Facebook. I had a teacher that was passionate about like finding ways to communicate to the community and to the parents. She posted for 100 days straight on Facebook with a kid, with a video or something. And we saw engagement increase dramatically just through that platform, because most parents were on that platform. That's how they wanted to receive communication. They didn't tell us that, but it was evident based on the user experience. And so because we found value in that, we continued to post into that application. So is that normal? No, but it was what was best for our communication to our parents. And so sometimes you have to think outside the box. Sometimes you have to get creative to find ways to make that relationship.
That is such a good point. We sometimes get frustrated when the platform or the system we're using isn't working, but we see it as a time waster because, you know, they're not checking their email, they're not whatever. But in reality, we need to reflect and pivot and adapt so that we can. I have seen a huge increase at my own kids' schools of using more social media to get the mm-hmm. same information that's in the emails. You know, sometimes I feel like by the time I check the email, maybe get the text message and the Facebook, it's like, oh, it's all the same info. But I know that that is what some families need. They need it to be other places. You know, so often inboxes get overloaded and mm-hmm. it's so easy for things to get lost. So it's like, what else can we do to communicate? I really struggled to know you know, what was, a lot of times, many years, I would teach 150 students, right? So a student come in, they're like, I couldn't do my homework. I couldn't do this. I couldn't do whatever you asked of me because I had, and they would list all the excuses. Mm-hmm. And it, sometimes I'd get really like internally frustrated, not with the student, but I would just be like, that, you know, we have to value students learning. But the reality is we can only control what we can control. And I think that is what we have to remind ourselves. So you cannot control a parent who needs their eighth grader to babysit all night while they go to work. You can't control that. But what you can control is the learning that happens in your school, on your campus. You can control where you do the community outreach. And I think especially this time of year, it's easy to kind of get into that those ruts, especially we've talked about the weather not being the greatest, and sometimes it's gloomy and the days might seem long. But just kind of reminding yourself of what can I do inside of my office, inside of my school, inside my classroom, and focus on that, because you cannot control whether or not a student is able to complete tasks at home. You cannot control whether or not a student signs up to be a part of the PTO. You cannot control whether or not they remember to call their student in sick. You can't do any of that. What you can control is just the students that are that come to you every day and how you treat them and how you let them see how important what you do with them every day is. And all it takes is one, you know, one conversation for a student to realize, oh, what I'm doing here does matter and will impact. You know, when I taught like middle school, so hard for a kid to see that they're establishing things that will set them up for success. You know, it was like, no, I know your grade technically doesn't matter. I know it's like just going to go in a folder somewhere, but like your behaviors will matter because it's going, you know, you're starting things that will matter for your adulthood. And I you know, just continuing to help them and coach them and let them see that they can still control. I think sometimes kids especially feel like they have no control, that everyone around them is, you know, all the adults in their life are in control, but just helping them take the reins of their learning is super important. But then like to your point, Josh, what can we do that, you know, alters some things that we've already got established so we can meet the needs of our community? Because sometimes the things we think might work aren't going to, and that's okay. We've got to be able to pivot. So such good conversation as always, Josh. Gosh, I feel like we could talk all morning, but
for sure,
you know, my coffee's cold.
I need a second cup. So
yeah, exactly. Well, friends, thank you so much for joining us. If you are catching us later, or maybe you caught the tail end of this and you want to hear the whole thing, you can check us out. We are this, these all got turned into a podcast, which sometimes are so great, especially if you're going out for that run or on your drive to or from work. Just it's nice to kind of listen and get some PD. So you can always check us out. Thank you for all of our listeners. But everyone who joins us in the comments and sticks around for our banter, we appreciate you. We appreciate our community. And Josh, thanks for spending your morning with me.
Oh, anytime. As long as they'll let me.
That's right. That's true. All right. We'll see you guys later.
Hey, Teach Better community. Thank you so much for joining the Teach Better Today morning show every single weekday at 7 a.m. Eastern. We have so many resources for you outside of this live stream at teachbetter.com, including blogs, podcasts, and professional development that will bring our team to your school. Wherever you are listening from this morning, please make sure you are sharing and celebrating the incredible educators in this world. And hey, if you are listening over on a podcast to Teach Better Talk, we would love a 5-star review. The comments are always so entertaining. We'll see you tomorrow.